Welcome to Everything Pro Wrestling. Everything Pro Wrestling is a show by the fans, for the fans. And I am your host, Conrad Cushman, and we are here today with a review of WCW Starrcade 1997. This is episode 34 of the Everything Pro Wrestling podcast. Now, before we get into our review of Starrcade 1997, I did want to remind you guys that we are available on several platforms for the podcast. You can listen to us on Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and Stitcher. Do me a favor and make sure you click the subscribe button to get the best wrestling podcast content out there. Now, mentioning that, we also will have some sponsored ads now on the show, so that's a good way to get revenue for the show, and hopefully you guys don't mind. I'm going to try and keep them short so we can get into the great content that you guys love so much. With all that being said, let's get right into the Starrcade 1997 review. WCW Starrcade 1997 falls in line perfectly with our retro review series, going back to August. In August, we did a retro review of WCW Road Wild 1997, and we stayed with the year 1997 when we reviewed Fall Brawl, Halloween Havoc, and World War III. Now we are at the biggest show of the year for WCW, Starrcade. Now, when we go to talk about Starrcade for this review, I want you guys to understand the importance of Starrcade. Starrcade is the equivalent to WWE's WrestleMania. They built this show up all year for the big payoff to be here. This show is very important to WCW due to the fact of everything that's happening at the time. WCW's on top of the Monday Night Wars at this point. And once again, the Monday Night Wars is happening from 1996 till about the end of 1998, in my opinion. And everything is going at its peak. You have talent going back and forth. Creative is trying to do its best job to put on a great show to attract viewers on both sides. And WCW show for this has been built around Hollywood Hulk Hogan versus Sting. Sting at the time had a character similar to The Crow. Scott Hall gave the idea to Eric Bischoff and Sting that Sting should play the character of The Crow because of a cool movie he had saw. And Sting ended up wearing black and white face paint, basically white face paint with a black trim around it. And he went silent. He stopped speaking and he carried around a baseball bat to take out whoever was in his way. And that's what this show was built around. And we're going to get into all the matches and everything else. But this show came off as awesome. The build for it was great. But let's get into some of the details of the show. The show took place at the MCI Center in Washington, D.C., and the event happened on December 28th, 1997. The commentary team was Tony Schiavone, Mike Tenay, and Dusty Rhodes. Man, we get into this event. This is the biggest event, like I said, for WCW. This was their biggest event of all time, in my opinion. And we'll talk about it with some of the matches coming up. But the first thing I want to talk about is the video package that was shown. Now, I'm actually going to play this in the background while I look at it. So you get some like thunder noises happening and you see images of Hollywood Hulk Hogan in the background. Sting is sitting on top of a building in a trench coat with his black and white face paint on, walking around. And you see images of Hogan behind glass and Sting's walking around. And it's very cinematic. And he watches from the shadows, pops up, because at this time, Sting's not talking. So there are words that are doing the talking for him. Sting's got the long hair now, and it's raining outside, and he jumps down into a pile of rubble. And you can see his baseball bat, and he steps on a picture of Hulk Hogan. When he picks up his baseball bat, he witnessed the ruin of an empire, and Sting is basically here to take back what is his, which is WCW, because he's the franchise. And I thought it was very well done. I love it. And now he seeks the ruin of one man. And that man is Hulk Hogan. And then it zooms into his eyes and shows WCW Starrcade 1997 logo. Excellent work. best video package I think I've ever seen WCW do. After that, we get into the opening contest. The opening contest was for the Cruiserweight title. We had Dean Malenko versus the champion, Eddie Guerrero. Overall, okay match. Nothing really special in here. I actually expected these two to have better chemistry than they did. Excuse me, I had to get a drink of water there. I thought Dean Malenko and Eddie Guerrero were going to do a lot better than they did. And I just think that's based on their friendship and everything else that I'm assuming that. But I was a little disappointed. Overall, I gave it a grade of a C. The match ends when Eddie Guerrero hits a frog splash on Dean Malenko's knee and then pins him. Just kind of a blah ending. So it was an okay match, but just kind of fell flat to me. We get to our next segment, which is Scott Hall coming out, and he announces that Kevin Nash won't be here to face the Giant, which I thought was kind of BS. I mean, they are trying to build this huge story lineup of who's the true Giant, and the Giant wants to face Nash because of all the stuff that happened between them, and it just doesn't happen. So the Giant comes out there, and he ends up clobbering Scott Hall and powerbombs Scott Hall. Cool. I was just disappointed that we didn't see Nash out there at all. I don't know. I thought it sucked a little bit. Our second match, we have a six-man tag match. We have the NWO versus the Steiner Brothers and Ray Traylor, who is the big boss man, if you didn't know. Who's on Team NWO? We have Vincent, Scott Norton, and it's supposed to be Conan, but Macho Man Randy Savage fills in. I don't know if they felt like they needed a bigger name on the card or if Macho Man had to be on the card. I can't explain. But it happened. So we get into the match. Vincent is in the ring at one point. And if you guys don't know, Vincent is Virgil from the old WWF days. And he was always, his name was always a rib. When he was Virgil, he's named after Virgil Reynolds, which is Dusty Rhodes. And in WCW, when Dusty's on creative, he's named Vincent after Vince McMahon. Vincent gets in the ring, and he is getting slapped up. Like, freaking everybody is just slapping him across his mouth. And I give Vincent a lot of credit. I know a lot of people talk crap about my man Meat Sauce, but when he goes out there and he's wrestling a match, I think he does a pretty good job. He wrestles like a manager versus wrestling like a wrestler, and he just does his job and takes a lot of moves. So he ends up eating this move, which is like a doomsday DDT. Rick Steiner hoists him up on the shoulders in like the doomsday position, and he walks over to the rope, and I'm like, oh, I wonder what they're going to do. Scott Steiner freaking DDTs this dude off Rick Steiner's shoulders, and I'm like, this should be over right here. It wasn't. They fooled us into it. And in the end, after some NWO shenanigans, after breaking up the pinfall, Macho Man hits an elbow on Scott Steiner. 1, 2, 3. The NWO pick up the victory. Overall, great of a C for that match. On commentary, they're going crazy because they're, oh no, are the NWO going to win tonight? Is this going to spell doom for WCW? I get it. They're doing the build-up thing because it's not looking good right now at this point. We get a next segment here with, we get another segment here with Mean Gene and J.J. Dillon. And J.J. Dillon comes out to make a weird announcement. It was kind of like a WTF moment on the show. He comes out to announce that Nick Patrick is going to be the main event referee. Nick Patrick at this time had a relationship with the NWO. I guess he got picked out of a hat, supposedly, according to J.J. Dillon. So his hands were tied, but he expected Nick Patrick to do his job and officiate the match fairly. Okay. But I don't know. I didn't like that this was an announcement. This was kind of stupid and awkward and weird. You could have played off of this a lot differently if I rebooked this, but I'm going to leave it where it is for right now. So we get to the next match, which is match number 3 on the card. We have Goldberg versus Steve Mongo McMichael. I can't even tell you the words I have written down in here. This match is crap. Very sloppy by both guys. It's clear when you're watching this that Steve Mongo McMichael is not that great in the ring. And same for Goldberg. I felt this match went on for an eternity, way too long. And I'm watching the match, and I'm like, where did a table come from? It was the weakest looking table I've ever seen. And it looked like it was made out of plywood. And they use it in the match, but I don't know. Everything just felt super awkward and forced in this match. If you watch the matches after this, that's when Goldberg really starts to get popular. At this point, Goldberg was kind of a lower card act. He wasn't moving up, and he wasn't getting the great fan reactions that he was getting. He was getting a small one, but after this, after this show, I would say within the next two or three Nitros, that's when you start seeing him destroy people. I think he destroyed like Glacier and someone else after that, and he started getting big crowd reactions for his energy in those matches. But this match right here, complete garbage, grade D. Goldberg wins with the jackhammer. I didn't like it. So we get to the next match. I'm led to believe that it's supposed to be Raven versus Chris Benoit. Raven gets in the ring and sits in the corner like he usually does with his leather jacket on, acting all depressed. And he says that when he signed his WCW contract, he said he would wrestle where he wants, when he wants. Okay. And all of his matches are usually under Raven's rules, so the match is still going to be under Raven's rules, but Perry Saturn is going to wrestle Chris Benoit instead. So we get two ECW alumni interacting here, and Raven is too. But they're playing up his character more so in this to make him interesting. And I thought Raven's character was really cool. I know if you listen to 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff and Conrad Thompson, Bischoff is not too fond of the character. I always enjoyed Raven's character. I'd be interested to hear what you guys think of his character in WCW and ECW, but I always liked his character. I don't know. I just found that odd that Bischoff wasn't a fan. So Raven subs in Saturn for the match because of his WCW contract. We got two good wrestlers in the ring. The Flock interfere in this match to help Saturn. We see a young Billy Kidman out there. We see Scotty Riggs, who was captured by Raven and the Flock last time, and he has been groomed to be into the Flock lifestyle, I guess we'll say. And Scotty Riggs is now part of the group. You have Lodi, Sick Boy, everybody's in there. So Kidman's doing shooting star presses off the apron on the Chris Benoit on the floor. Lots of interference, but Benoit's fighting everyone off, and that rabid Wolverine stuff hasn't started yet. But you can see Chris Benoit is vicious in this, and he takes a lot of abuse in this match. But Chris Benoit ends up eating a DDT from Raven, the Even Flow DDT, and Benoit's knocked out. And Saturn puts on the Rings of Saturn, and the ref just rings the bell because Benoit's knocked out. Overall, C+ for the match. I thought it could have been a little bit better with more time, but with all the shenanigans with Raven's Flock, and why wouldn't they jump Benoit? It made sense logically. I just didn't particularly like all the interference. I'm like, man, the guy has no chance, but that's what it was supposed to do. So average match, really good though. Decent, I'll say. Saturn picks up the win. Let's move on here to the next match. I got to turn the page. There were lots of notes for this show. We get to Buff Bagwell versus Lex Luger. Holy crap. Another match of headlocks. Headlocks. I saw lots of headlocks, basic moves, aggravating a little bit. So the match storyline is built up off of Luger basically losing to Buff Bagwell a couple times, whether it was by DQ, countout, but he hasn't been pinned yet. Buff Bagwell talks all this crap coming to the ring about how Luger can't beat him. And Bagwell ends up getting beat up early on in the beginning of the match, and Bagwell's calling for Vincent to come out. And I just laughed. I'm like, this dude just ate a DDT off the top rope, and you're calling for his help? But basic match, lots of clotheslines from Luger, power slams. If you've seen his matches, you know how he's going to wrestle in them. I'm not going to give you the full play-by-play, especially during this era. We get a ref bump in the match. Luger ends up hitting a torture rack on Buff Bagwell, but there's no ref to hear him tap out or see anything. Savage ends up coming out to the ring, but he gets stopped by Luger, and Luger knocks him down. Scott Norton then comes out, and he hits Luger in the head with what appears to be Rick Steiner's dog collar, and he knocks him out. And then Buff Bagwell is thrown on top of Luger, and the referee gets picked up by his pants, actually, when Scott Norton throws him. Scott Norton was a beast in Japan, if you didn't know. And 1, 2, 3, Buff Bagwell picks up the pinfall victory on Lex Luger. Unbelievable right here. But I'm going to take a little break here, guys, get a drink, and I'm going to have a sponsorship ad play during this time, and we'll be right back with the rest of Starrcade 1997. I'm back, and we are on to match number 6 on the Starrcade card. It is for the United States Heavyweight Championship. We have Curt Hennig, the current champion, versus Diamond Dallas Page. Now, at this time, DDP is on fire. He's one of the hottest superstars in WCW. He is doing really good. This is during the time when he wears the jeans and the taped up ribs, and I know I'm a big fan of him during this time period. And he had a t-shirt out that was selling like hotcakes. I remember it was the black shirt, and then it had like the blue diamond with his face and him doing the diamond symbol that he always threw up. And man, DDP was over is all I'm trying to tell you guys. Now, this is a well-worked match, and look at the two who you have in here. You have Curt Hennig and Diamond Dallas Page. What did you expect? So these guys are in there working together. Great match. Just some good wrestling for 1997. And DDP and Curt Hennig go back and forth, back and forth. Even with DDP getting his ribs worked over, Hennig's ripping at it, tearing at the ribs. He always had great in-ring psychology throughout the matches. DDP ends up pulling him into the ring posts. You had so many good spots in this match, but the best spot is always the end. DDP's in the ring, and he comes in, and what is he known for the most? The diamond cutter. He ends up kind of like doing a counter move to Curt Hennig. He jumps over him and then turns around on the other side and hits a diamond cutter. 1, 2, 3. Diamond Dallas Page wins the United States Championship. This is a huge moment for him. DDP is showing that he is a star, and I think it was at this moment where I was like, DDP could be a main event player. And I remember that as a kid, just Diamond Dallas Page feuding with Macho Man and getting to this point, DDP was the man. He looked like a star, and he was kind of the people's champ for WCW, and he ended up getting called that later. But DDP would go into the crowd and hold up the belt, and the fans just loved DDP. I gave that match a grade of a B-. I thought it was really well done. Best match on the card, easily to me. They did a really good job wrestling that match. It didn't have the best build-up, but it was the best wrestling match on the card, I should say. Next match, we have Eric Bischoff versus Larry Zbyszko with the special guest referee of Bret the Hitman Hart. Bret the Hitman Hart is coming into WCW off of the Montreal Screwjob. And oh, that was not a good time. When Eric Bischoff comes out, he's accompanied to the ring by Scott Hall during this time period. If you listen to the past retro reviews, Scott Hall and Larry Zbyszko are kind of having a feud with each other. Scott Hall has included Larry Zbyszko in all of this, and this has kind of a double stipulation to it. So if Eric Bischoff wins, Nitro's on the line, and the NWO will take over Nitro if Eric Bischoff wins. And if Larry Zbyszko wins, he will face Scott Hall at NWO Sold Out, the next pay-per-view in January. Cool. So Eric Bischoff comes out, and if a lot of you didn't know this and you're watching this, Eric Bischoff's actually coming out, and he's wearing like kind of a gi, and everyone's going to wonder, does he know karate? Eric Bischoff actually competed on ESPN in karate before he worked with the AWA. So if you didn't know that, Eric Bischoff actually knows karate. So this is no gimmick. He actually does know it, but he's taking advantage of it in the wrestling ring. Bischoff actually does a pretty good job in this match. I mean, he misses some kicks and stuff, but you can't really fake throwing a karate kick to someone who's competed in like competitions for it. So I find it kind of hard. And that's the same reason why I always stuck up for guys like Glacier, Ernest the Cat Miller. Those guys have it real tough for that. I would say X-Pac or Six is one of the best at throwing those types of kicks and making them look good. I digress. So we get into this match, and Eric Bischoff takes a great beating. And I was trying to decide between him or Vincent. They both took bumps like managers. And I respect that and I love that. That's one of my favorite parts when you watch someone who doesn't wrestle all the time. I like when they take the bumps a little bit differently and they make them look realistic. So they get into the ring and everything's going to town. At one point, Bischoff gets like these couple of cheap shots in, but Larry Zbyszko eventually is not having it and he's beating him down. And the commentary team is playing off whose side is Bret Hart on. Is he NWO? Is he WCW? And they felt he was being biased towards WCW throughout, of course. Didn't you guys do this with Sting and that's why he didn't talk to you guys either? Just pointing that out. So they're watching Bret Hart and they're just trying to figure out what he's trying to do. And at one point, Larry Zbyszko puts Eric Bischoff in a tree of woe. And his foot's caught upside down. So Scott Hall's yelling, get him back, get him back. You can't do that. And Larry and Bret are getting to this argument kind of. And it's whose side is he on? While that's happening, Scott Hall climbs up and shoves something inside of his kick pad, a metal object of some sort. And Eric Bischoff gets down and he eventually kicks Larry in the head again. And Larry Zbyszko goes down like a ton of bricks. And the item that he put inside of the kick pad flies out into the crowd. So who knows what it was. And they're sitting there and Bischoff's talking to Bret like, yeah, you want to join the NWO? And I think he's talking about money or something. Bret winds up clobbering Bischoff because he saw the thing fly out of his kick pad. And I don't know if it was designed that way, but it worked out perfectly for them. And Scott Hall then comes into the ring. He eats an atomic drop and then Bret Hart puts him in a sharpshooter. And then Larry Zbyszko gets up and starts beating the crap out of Eric Bischoff, choking him out. And then Bret says, ring the bell, and awards the match to Larry Zbyszko. I just wonder, why couldn't Larry just get the pinfall in this match, though? I think everything would have been way easier and looked way better if that happened. Just my opinion. But it was a decent match. I give it a C+ for guys who were in there that weren't really wrestling on a weekly basis. I mean, Bischoff actually looked really good. He was in there with no shirt on, and Bischoff was actually in shape. I was surprised. I think a lot of us just forget that he's a great talent as well. Eric Bischoff, all the credit in the world goes to him for what he did in that ring. Bret gets the great moment, and WCW gets the eyeballs on the screen because they got the guy who was in the Montreal Screwjob a month ago. And all the garbage that happened and took place with that. And that's another podcast for another time, I promise you. But Bret Hart making big waves in WCW. And then we get Michael Buffer coming out. Michael Buffer announces the main event. It is now time for the WCW World Heavyweight Championship match. In my opinion, WCW's biggest moment. They have to deliver in this match. On one side, we have Hollywood Hulk Hogan, and he is going to take on Sting. Now, once again, Sting's character at this time was based off a movie called The Crow from the 90s. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend you go check it out. And this is all due to Scott Hall suggesting that. Very cool. Sting's story here is he needs to reclaim the WCW title so that they get back on the same page. This match is big match feel. Sting has not wrestled in a year. I think it was a year plus maybe, but Sting has not done any wrestling. You could tell when you watch him in this match, he's a little bit rusty, but Sting knew how to play it off with some of the moments. And it wasn't as bad as I thought going back and watching this. I still felt like Sting knew what he had to do in this show. Like, he knew that his moments were going to come up. He still was landing drop kicks. He did everything. And I don't know if I maybe am not expecting too much, but he had a little ring rust, and that's going to be expected, guys. I don't know. I think people were expecting a lot out of him for this. So, okay, decent match wrestled, right? What did I say this match had to do in the very beginning of all this? It had to deliver. Let's talk about the finish to this match. So Nick Patrick was the referee, like I said previously. He was in the NWO. We get to the match. Hogan's basically in control of most of the match. Why it was worked out this way, I'm not sure. But Hogan hits the big boot. He does the looking at the crowd, points to his ears three times, and he goes off the ropes and lands a leg drop. One, two, three. Now, Nick Patrick goes outside to tell the ref to ring the bell, and you don't hear the bell ring at all because Bret Hart's standing there holding the person who rings the ring bell's hand. And he's like, oh, no, it's not going down like that, he says. And Nick Patrick says, ring the bell. He says, no, I said it's not going down like that. He punches Nick Patrick, and he tells Hogan to get in the ring. I don't know if he throws him in or Sting goes to get him. Either way, Hogan and Sting wind up back in the ring. A scorpion, Sting hits the big splash in the corner. It's Stinger splash. He almost fell out of the ring the first time he did it because he was so hyped. Then he did it again, another Stinger splash, and he locks on the scorpion deathlock. Bret Hart gets down there in Hogan's face, and he calls for the bell, and Sting has won to become the WCW World Heavyweight Champion. It's an amazing moment. The ring fills up with WCW talent. There were some guys in there who I didn't even recognize. Who's the guy in the yellow jacket if you go back to watch this? Like, he looked like security, but he was in there showing his face, and I don't know. I just laughed at that part. But you had everybody in there, from Luger, the Giant, Ming. They're all in there happy. Sting's holding up the WCW title with the NWO spray paint on it, and it's just a great moment. It's a great visual to see that. Now, I told you how that was supposed to happen, right? What actually happened, I should say. Let me tell you what was supposed to happen. You go back because this led to a bunch of controversy, which I'll get into later. What was supposed to happen was Nick Patrick was supposed to count the count differently. He ended up counting the count one, two, three. He was supposed to fast count, basically one, two, three, and that was where Bret was going to come out and say, you can't screw somebody. When you go back and look at this, Bret Hart looks like an asshole because Bret Hart basically stopped someone who won a match fair and square. And it created this whole hoopla. So, and they were trying to play off the Montreal screw job, which everybody was at the time. WWF uses it at the next year Survivor Series, the Deadly Games tournament. You had WCW doing it now. I think at next year's Starrcade, you see something similar too with another type of Montreal screwjob finish. Overplayed. But, dude, when you go back and look at this, it makes you wonder. There's a lot of conspiracy theories as far as, did Nick Patrick screw up? Did Hulk Hogan tell him to do that? Did Eric Bischoff tell him to do that? Did Sting not know what was going on? Was that sabotage for what happened afterwards? So basically, they wound up letting Sting walk around with the title for a week or two, and then they took the belt away from him and held it up for vacant, abeyance, whatever you want to call it, and there was no champion until Super Brawl. What the hell happened with this? This had to deliver, and I think it would have got a higher grade for me, but I'm going to give it an overall of a C-plus for this match. They did their best with it, but I felt like you could have done so much more with Hogan and Sting. If I went back and rebooked this, you could have put them in a cage. Like, the NWO really didn't come out. So you mean to tell me that I'm supposed to believe for the most part that the NWO was going to stay in the back until Bret Hart and the ending finish came? I don't know. I didn't like it. I felt maybe if you put them in the big cage like you did with Piper and Hogan before, you could have kept everybody out and said, this is going to be a one-on-one match. You could have had Hogan and Sting get in there, have just a great cage match. And I don't have to say what they needed to do in there because it would have protected Sting from the ring rust. Hogan could have just did what he usually does. It would have worked still, I felt. And you could have done the exact same thing with Nick Patrick trying to get out of the cage and do the exact same stuff and make it work. Overall, though, guys, what did you think of the show? I'm going to give my overall score after this, but I do want to hear what you guys think of some of the matches on the show. If you got feedback, leave it in the Facebook group. All that stuff will be in the description box, and I want to hear from you guys. But we're going to get to another message from Everything College Basketball with Josh Burton, and then I will bring you my overall score, and we'll wrap up this podcast.
Hey everyone, I'm Josh Burton, inviting you all to come join the fastest growing group dedicated solely to college basketball, Everything College Basketball. Just go to Facebook and in the search bar type in Everything College Basketball. Once you've joined, feel free to begin chatting with other diehard college hoops nuts like yourselves. Also, while you're there, go check out the podcast on Anchor, Podbean, SoundCloud, and Google Play. Just search up Everything College Basketball Podcast, and as always, like, share, and subscribe.
Ooh, yeah, dig it!
Everything College Basketball. I can dig it. I like the play on the names there, too. But let's get to the overall score of this pay-per-view. The overall grade that I'm going to give this show is a C+. Why a C+? I thought they had some matches that delivered, and I think that the big match feel going into the matches delivered, but some of the matches, once you got there, fell short to me. Some of them under-delivered, and I did not like some of the botched finishes or if those things were planned and it just worked out. Some of it just was ugly to me. Now, the show did a tremendous buy rate, like I said, and I'm impressed with that number. I believe it was like close to 10,000 buys. Let me see if I can pull it up actually real quick here. 1.60 buy rate. Whatever, and that's relative. Excellent. Excellent. But it didn't deliver. And when you go back and look at this, it's easy to see why some people migrated over to the WWE at that time. You had a botch ending. You paid for a pay-per-view only to have it destroyed in a couple weeks, only to have a rematch happen a month or two later. I mean, did everybody leave all at once? No. It wasn't like everybody stopped watching WCW because of one thing that happened. It was several things that kind of led up to people leaving. And I think this kind of started it a little bit. Once you went over there, you were like, well, do I want to watch Hogan Sting, which I was supposed to get the finish of, and I'm seeing it repeat over again here, and I didn't like the way that the card went down, even though I paid for that pay-per-view. I'm going to watch Mike Tyson, who is banned from boxing at this time, and he's going to be in the WWE, and he's down with DX doing crotch chops and everything else. It's easy to see why some people maybe started to migrate over. Just bringing that up. But I also want to take this time so that people know that WCW deserves credit. They put on an excellent show. They had awesome talent from Eddie Guerrero, Dean Malenko. We saw the Steiner brothers. We saw NWO guys. We saw Goldberg, Benoit, Saturn, Raven, Luger, DDP, Kurt Hennig, Scott Hall, Hogan, Sting. The names are tremendous on this. And yes, a lot of them came from the WWE or previously the WCW and back and forth, whatever. At the end of the day, WCW changed the game. They made WWE step their game up, whether it was doing live TV, changing some of the way they format their shows. They made WWE better for us, and they made wrestling better on a whole. And that's one thing that I will give it up to Eric Bischoff for. You are the man for that. And you did a great job with WCW, and I know a lot of people would rather crap all over WCW then give them their credit. But going back and watching some of this stuff, I give you credit, Eric Bischoff. You were probably one of the few people, along with Ted Turner, who brought it to Vince McMahon and made him step his game up. With that being said, overall grade for this, C+ for this show. It wasn't bad, and WCW didn't get horrible immediately after this. They still put on a good product for the most part. even if you didn't like it. I always preferred WWE, as you've heard me say in previous reviews. But this was still a good product. Nothing to be disappointed about going forward. Not that you should have lost all hope after this. But I think it was the beginning of why I could see people losing hope, if that makes sense. With all that being said, thank you for listening to the Everything Pro Wrestling podcast, guys. Do me a favor, make sure that you check out everything in the description box. I have all my grades listed in there. Also, check out the YouTube channel. If you guys are liking the content on here, make sure you subscribe to the YouTube channel. That's where I put all my reviews after a show goes up. I want you guys to check those out. And next week, I know that I will be back for sure. Doing a preview for WWE TLC 2018. You aren't going to want to miss that. I have a lot to say about that show coming up, and I look forward to it. And also, if you guys have any ideas, jump into the Everything Pro Wrestling Facebook group. We'll have a link in there as well. And I want to talk about end of the year awards. With all that being said, thank you for listening to Everything Pro Wrestling. Peace.